Mark Morano is unleashed, and he's taking on the World Economic Forum, the World Health Organization, and the United Nations on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to Mark Morano's Unleashed with me, Lambert Opik. Just standing in for a couple of days for my colleague as we continue with the same topics, with the same energy, and hopefully the same insights that you come to expect from Mark himself. Do get your calls and comments in at tntradio.live. Regular viewers know that I will read as many of them out as I possibly can. I'll come back to them in a moment. Again, coming up in this hour, we're talking to Dr. Shea Bradley Farrell, PhD, who is president of the Counterpoint Institute of Policy Research and Education, CIPRE, and has written a very important work called Last Warning to the West, Hungary's Triumph Over Communism and the Woke Agenda. What does that contain? What does it mean? What are the lessons for us? Well, you'll hear all of that from Dr. Shea Bradley herself when she comes on in a few minutes' time. Also, I hope that you'll be developing your opinions based on what we've just heard from my first guest, Doug Bando, who is full of criticism of Biden and his administration's weakness, had firsthand experience of one of the great politicians from America, and I use great in a morally neutral way, Ronald Reagan, who was unquestionably one of the big giants in the world stage and arguably one of the architects of the detente, the peacemaking process between Russia and the United States. You may remember a chap called Mikhail Gorbachev, somebody I actually met, and Ronald Reagan. They seem to have a special relationship too, as indeed he had with Margaret Thatcher. Both of them indeed did. So that was fascinating. Lots of you are saying, let me summarize it without reading those comments again, that we have no business of going to war in the way that we do. We're doomed to fail. And worst of all, we actually make things worse. That's a sentiment that Doug seemed to agree with as well. The other lesson there was that Ukraine could be a hiding to nothing, to use a British phrase. In other words, however much money we put into it, we're not going to win. And with these estimates of up to $400,000 million already invested directly and indirectly, about a third of that in direct military aid, we don't have very much to show for it, do we? Apart from a stagnant front, perhaps even some retreat on the Ukrainian side, and increasingly shrill demands for even more funding from the premier of Ukraine, Zelensky himself. Meanwhile, the supply lines, as I've just discussed with Doug, for Russia are incredibly short, just across the border, versus thousands of kilometers with all kinds of problems logistically to get support in from the West. Do keep your calls and comments coming on that if you like to. But I want to move on before we speak to Dr. Shea Bradley Farrell to another subject which has been making the news today. The United Kingdom has been celebrating a small decline in its inflation rate to 3.2% or somewhere around that. That's actually not a factual figure. It's a nominal figure. It depends what you include in terms of the basket of prices that you decide to consider relevant to the inflation rate. And obviously, it depends from person to person on what they buy, how much they spend, whether they're purchasing a house or a car or a plane ticket or food or something else. But the headline story is that the inflation rate has come down a little bit to 3.2% after having touched something like 11% not long ago. On the face of it, that sounds like pretty good news. And I suppose it is in a way. But there are two things that I've noticed about this. First of all, there seems to be an absolutely determined willingness by politicians to think that none of this is their fault when they're in government. And yet, energy, for example, and the cost of energy is a direct consequence of what I was talking about earlier on at the beginning of the first hour of the show. The energy prices are high because we're choosing to spend, and I would use the word waste, a fortune on renewable energy. Wind and solar are the two obvious ones, but there are some other types as well. And as a result of that, we've abandoned maybe a trillion cubic feet of gas, of shale gas under the United Kingdom alone, a fairly cheap and a pretty clean source of power, let alone excavating the countless tons of coal that have yet to be exploited in the UK, all in the name of climate emergencies. Well, I think we have to be realistic here. If we have stupid policies, we'll have a stupidly high inflation rate. And it's not that I celebrate the fact they've got it wrong. I lament the fact we're not getting it right. If you actually make inflation and control of inflation your number one priority, then energy policy has to be right at the center of that, because everything we do takes energy. I would estimate I'm using probably a kilowatt or two broadcasting to you as I speak now. When you drive a car, it's a multi-kilowatt operation. Your television takes power, as does heating your house or cooling it, depending where you are. If you're in Dallas, I'm sure you'll have the air conditioning on at the moment. It was warm enough there when I was there last weekend. But without the energy budget being controlled in a rational way, all this talk about inflation is rather notional. It says to us, well, we'd like to control inflation as long as we can still have our virtue signaling policies at the same time. And connected to this, looking at the UK, but now broadening it out to the world, including the United States, let's recognize another thing. The very organizations that my colleague Mark Morano is so keen to focus on, and rightly so, World Economic Forum, World Health Organization, and all these other groups, International Monetary Fund, they love to preach to the world about what should be done. By and large, none of the people in charge of those organizations are elected. They don't have a constituency of real people to whom they're really accountable, but they love to tell us what to do. When you look at Japan, it runs a huge national deficit and always has. The quality of life in Japan, in some ways, is unique, but in other ways, is stable and high. And they don't follow the orthodoxy. But there's an even more ironic example of why we might want to be a little bit skeptical about those economists who tell elected representatives, entire governments, and populations how to manage their economies and their spending. And it's this fact. And let me quote from the state-sponsored news outlet in the UK. So this isn't from some communist-sympathizing left-wing propagandist paper. It's the state-sponsored media outlet in the UK. And I quote, Russia to grow faster than all advanced economies, says International Monetary Fund. Let me tell you that again, in case you weren't really listening. Russia, R-U-S-S-I-A, to grow faster than all advanced economies, says IMF. Apparently, Russia's economy will outstrip all the world's advanced economies this year. Now, let's think about that. I was just talking with my previous guest, Doug Bando, about the conflict in Ukraine, which is heavily absorbing Russian manufacturing and Western investment. And yet, despite all the sanctions and everything else we're doing to Russia, at Russia, against Russia, the IMF, which can't be accused of being some sort of a puppet supporter of Vladimir Putin in Moscow, is saying Russia's performance is going to outstrip everybody else. How can this be if the orthodoxy works? What is it that we're missing when it comes to the Russian success and others' comparative poorer performance? Well, I have a theory and I'm going to share it now. Big warning, this is my opinion, so you don't have to agree with it. It is this. Russia has not been foolish enough to shackle itself with virtue signaling green environmental nonsense. Secondly, it hasn't shackled itself with a burden of red tape, which makes it almost impossible for some small operators to enter some markets. I am aware, acutely aware, for example, that in Wales, which is one of the nations of the United Kingdom, it is so difficult to be a landlord, to rent out a property, that people are selling out. They're just leaving because it's too difficult. Now, if you think about those two things, the unwillingness to put unnecessary additional costs on the economy for environmental reasons, plus a willingness to let entrepreneurs be entrepreneurs, and suddenly you might see hints of why Russia is doing so well. But oh, the irony, despite the fact that no ordinary Russian citizen can fly directly to the UK or to America, has to travel indirectly through a third-party country, despite the fact that you're not meant to invest in Russian business, despite the fact that you'll be investigated if you have some sort of a business transaction of a significant size with some Russian business person, despite all of that, Russia's doing better than the West. There's another country that's doing quite well. I'm not sure if you've noticed. It's China. Oh, yes. The other great communist state. Apparently, a country that we have to watch. I don't think we're going to go to war with them, but because they make most of the stuff we buy. But country we've got to watch because of their political system. They are flying high. I've made this prediction before, and I'm going to make it again. China will be the biggest economy in the world in the next 20 years. I probably could halve that. Could be next 10 years. But one thing's for sure. Those two countries are doing so much better than we are. Well, my conclusion is this. When you leave aside the posturing and get down to the hard brass tacks of running an economy, then you sweep away a lot of what occupies us and what I find increasingly tedious on the old-fashioned state-sponsored mainstream media. I like the idea of seeing a businessman in charge of America again. Whatever you think about his proclivities, his legal cases, his aptness and proneness to say that he is the greatest politician that ever lived and things like that, at least he understands business. He became a billionaire somehow. You've also got to admire the fact that despite everything that's been thrown at him, somehow the premier of Russia can boast potentially better growth than any other part of the world. Now, you don't have to be a Putin supporter to recognize the fact that the International Monetary Fund has said so itself. What is the lesson here? Well, I think it is as simple as I said. Let's leave the posturing behind. And let's get our politicians to remember one thing and one thing alone. They are our servants. They have to do what they're told, not the other way around. And when we begin to recognize that, there's an outside chance we'll catch up with those countries that have already done it and then accepted that it's more important to be right than to look right. Maybe that's the great achievement. While everyone stares at Zelensky's beckoning for more money, Putin stares at the balance sheet. At the end of the day, wars are not so much fought with guns and bullets, but with political might in the form of economic strength. And if you measure it like that, according to the IMF and other figures, I suggest, this is my opinion, that the current winners are Russia and China. Let me know what you think. Go to tntradio.live. Put your calls and comments in there. Maybe you have a completely different view. Maybe you feel that my economic assessment is completely off beam. I still want to hear it, and I'll read it out as well. I'll read some of your calls and comments, or your comments out in just a moment. Coming up, we've got Dr. Shay Bradley. Not going to really go into the economic side with her too much, but I do want to know what lessons we can learn from Hungary and why she's so concerned about the woke agenda. All of that here on the Mark Morano Show, Unleashed, where I'm standing in for him. I'm Len Bitterbit. This is today's news talk. See you in a minute.
Johnny Vedmore, TNT.
If you go back 3 years ago and ask people why they're wearing a face mask, they'll soon give you an answer. But if you go back 4 years ago and ask the same person why they're not wearing a face mask, the two answers would be so extremely distant from each other that it'll boggle your mind. The only thing that changed was that someone on a television told them they might die if they didn't. Part of the reason we're in such dire straits today is the inability for some people to question the basic principles of what they've been told.
Talk that matters. Johnny Vedmore on today's News Talk, TNT.
In a democracy, the majority vote rules. But in most democracies, you can only vote for change every 3 or 4 years. To understand what people want, governments and political parties use focus groups. These focus groups can include as little as 20 people. Australia is a country of over 25 million people. Does making decisions based on 20 people sound fair to you? Have your say. Be heard in between elections. Download the For My Say app now. That is number 4, My Say.
I want to say this, and I'm going to say it just once.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Mark Morano Show, Unleashed with me, Lambert Topic, just standing in for him for a couple of days here on today's News Talk TNT. My show still continues at the weekends. I'm just honoured to stand in on Unleashed. A few comments coming in here, some of which will be strangely relevant to my next guest. Unleashed with Lambert says River. It's Unleashed with Mark Morano with Lambert Topic just standing in. Let's be clear about that. Keep the demarcation right. Charlotte says, good evening, Lem Sip Opiate. That's almost illegal, Charlotte, but thanks anyway. I'm not advertising anything, by the way. I have no shares in any of that. We've got more criticism, or no, more observations of my name. We've had Chuck says, and they never will, Lembit. I don't know which one you're referring to, but I probably agree with you because I generally agree with you. A couple more here. You know it's all rubbish, Lambert. Just say it so, says Mingling a Ding Dong. Well, a lot of it is rubbish. Yes, it is rubbish. I think the way that our economies are run in the West, it's nonsensical at the moment. It's heartbreaking. I studied economics, and I just think that the whole thing is a bit of a sham. There's no energy crisis. It's theft, plain and simple, says Holly. I agree with you. I think we've created the prices ourselves. And just one more. Lots of agreement to what Holly says there. And Charlotte says 100% scare tactic to maintain a compliant nation. I think that's true. A lot of debate about energy. I'm not going to go any further because I can't possibly keep up. You're writing faster than I can follow it up. And anyway, I want to speak to the next guest, a person with a pedigree as long as you're on, Dr. Shea Bradley Farrell, PhD, the president of the Counterpoint Institute for Policy Research and Education, CIPRE, in Washington, D.C., expert in foreign policy and aid, national security, international development. And for me, the most interesting thing, author of Last Warning to the West, Hungary's Triumph Over Communism and the Woke Agenda. Dr. Bradley Farrell, that's a book I want to read. Welcome to the show. Thanks for being here.
I'll send you your own copy. How's that?
Game on. Okay, we can stop broadcasting now. That's all I wanted. I promise you I'll read it. I'm absolutely fascinated by the title, and I'll give you my address later.
To do the research, yeah. It actually started because I went to Hungary and they told me the rhetoric coming out of the U.S. reminded them of their Soviet era. So anyway, I digress, but I thought that was important.
No, you don't digress. Tell me more about that. That's an interesting that's an interesting history for the book. Yeah, it's an interesting progenitor for the book. That's the book word I'm looking for. Tell me more about that background.
Well, they're correct. I mean, they spent 46 years under communist oppression, right? Soviet rule. And I walked that back. And you know, the things that we deal with today, like diminishment of parental rights, the division between people in this day and age on gender and race, all of that, even abortion that's trumpeted as healthcare, all of that comes from Marxism, right out of the Bolshevik Revolution. I actually put 11 points of communist psychological warfare in there that were written and published by our Department of Defense in 1959. And you look at them today, all 11 applies to the U.S. And many of them, I believe, apply to the European Union as well.
So you're saying that Senator McCarthy was right. We had reds in our bed and we didn't realize it. and we've just taken it all hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah, I actually, yes, literally and figuratively, because even Franklin Delano Roosevelt, our president, had communists and spies within his own administration or just Soviet sympathizers. So that whole Communist International thing, which I thought was a conspiracy theory, where, you know, the Soviet Union was trying to spread communism throughout the world, it was actually true. It's a true thing. And I think we're dealing with a lot of the repercussions of that today. Progressivism is very much aligned with communism. And that's the stories I got from the Hungarians.
What were you doing in Hungary? Was it the, what was the purpose of the trip, the book, or was the book just an incidental waste product of your trip?
Well, I've been many times. I've had a relationship with the Hungarian government and embassy and think tanks over there for, I guess, about 7 years now. And I was invited to write a book. But I wanted to find, I was going to write it for Hungarians. It was going to be translated into Hungarian about their national sovereignty and identity and fighting the EU. And then I realized, wow, I have a huge message right here for the West, for Americans, for Europe, that we are being sucked into this Marxism and this way of thinking. And it has become so commonplace that people just accept it naturally. Example is our own Supreme Court justice just a few weeks ago said, you know, said to somebody who was questioning an oral questioning for this case, she said, doesn't the First Amendment, which is our free speech amendment, doesn't that hamstring the government? And you know, my point is, yeah, it does. It's supposed to.
when you put it like that, I begin to think about some of my own concerns, and I freely express my opinions, but I don't disguise them as facts. My concern is that the global institutions that seek to influence policy, I mentioned one at the beginning, International Monetary Fund, but perhaps even more darkly, the World Economic Forum and its acolytes and the World Health Organization, they do seem to want to impose a top-down authoritarian approach. Am I seeing a ghost in the shadows, or is this something that you feel yourself?
Oh, you're absolutely right. And I talk about the European Union and some about international organizations in the book. The Biden administration has the same sort of focus. So I totally agree with you. Actually, Liz Truss is over here in America, or will be soon, to talk about her book. And I appreciate, you know, the word and the visibility that she's given to the globalist agenda. You know, I actually, my original career was in international development, and I traveled around the world helping underdeveloped nations prosper. But I believe in the good forms of globalization. They did a lot to lift countries out of bad situations and poverty and health. But we, the pendulum has gone too far in the other direction.
I'm just going to briefly digress now, and I won't come back to this. Many felt that the vaccine program during COVID was an example of essentially a world-enforced policy, and I have to say, I tend to agree with this next point, in which the vaccine was more of a problem and the lockdown was more of a problem than the disease itself.
Yes,
what's your view?
Absolutely. That is such a beautiful way to put it. You put it very well. It did become much greater. It created fear in people. And interestingly, that is one of the points of the communist psychological warfare that I told you about, to use a crisis to gain control. And we saw governments all over the world doing that. I mean, it was, you know, to use a less articulate word, it was creepy.
It's a good word. You remind me of a phrase. It's called the Maverick's motto, which was coined by an academician in the United Kingdom, Ed Joyce. He used a phrase in a slightly different context, but it seems very relevant to what you're saying. Let chaos reign, then reign in chaos. And it sounds to me that that's what you think they did.
Yeah, exactly. There's another phrase, but I can't remember, that's directly from Marxism to that point. That's exactly right. The mission of Marxism is to gain control. So you do that in any way possible during a crisis. Another way is to take over media. That's what the Soviets did as part of Sovietization in satellite countries, which was to take over media. And we certainly in the United States, our mainstream media is basically run by the Biden administration. And that court case I mentioned, Missouri versus Murthy, or the other way around, actually, has to do with the fact that the Biden administration was collaborating with social media platforms to suppress entire bodies of ideas having to do with the election, the 2020 presidential election, and having to do with COVID. So you're exactly right.
Well, that's continuing, of course. One of the most baffling, I used to work in Cincinnati quite a lot for a very large company there. And one of the things that's baffled me right through this whole process is the way that Trump's being accused of some criminal act of trying to subvert the outcome of the 2020 election when he simply said he thought that it wasn't fair. I'm amazed that a free country with the First Amendment thinks that that's a crime.
I'm amazed as well, Lambert. I'm amazed as well, because actually as a citizen, Trump had the right to question that. Yeah. And the other people that questioned it, we have the right to do that. You're taking me back to my book constantly, but I talk about this. I believe he's going through the Soviet show trials, very similar. You know, when I was doing research in Hungary, there's a place called the House of Terror. It was the headquarters of both the Soviet Union and the Nazis when they were there, where they killed and tortured their political opposition. And I asked a historian there, why do they need to put people on show trials if they know that they can throw him in jail or kill him anyway? And his answer was simply because then the public will believe that he's guilty. And I believe that's what's going on with Trump.
My parents are Estonian, hence the name Lembit Opik. And I was heavily involved in the independence movement around 1989, which turned out to be quite dangerous, but that's another story. I was taken to NKVD, which is a bit like the KGB, arguably even worse headquarters. Apart from the fact that in the cellar they had mincemeat machines, which is how they got rid of their uncomfortable witnesses. They also quite, yeah, it was, I said, did the political victims, were they dead when they went in to the mincemeat machines? They went usually, which was quite a dark response, really, I know. And then the other thing I learned was that there was this tight grip on media, as we know. And the great change, it was argued in the late 80s under Mikhail Gorbachev, a man I met but didn't particularly like when I met him, was that there was a bit of an opening up of free speech. My concern is the same as yours, that we are now seeing this volte-face, or perhaps simply conformism, where the West is actually just as keen on shutting down debate. The greatest bugbear I have on this is the authoritarian and totalitarian obsession with the non-existent climate emergency, where if you say you don't believe there's a climate crisis, there are those who say this person is guilty of a crime against humanity. It seems to me this is another allegory of what you're saying.
It is. That blows my mind. You're exactly right. And the only, I would love to know your thoughts on this. Part of it, I think, is because our education system, you know, even in the US, going back to the Frankfurt School, the socialist school that came here in the 1930s, where actually some of their intellectuals from that school were advisors to Franklin Delano Roosevelt. That's part of the book, too, I talk about. But I think that that's part of it, that our education and our organizations have been infiltrated with this type of thinking so that people, especially young people, they're not used to freedom thinking. I don't know if you'd agree with that, but I'm trying to figure this out.
You've asked me my opinion, and I shall freely give it to you. My belief is now that we have this insidious intervention through the national curriculum where things have to be taught, and it's not reading, writing, and arithmetic. It's there is a climate crisis. You have a political responsibility to stop flying. And then the other side of it is you have to engage in gender politics. And then the third thing is you have to engage in identity politics. Now, those things, in my view, have no place in a school curriculum because I think that all three of those are indoctrination, not education.
Yeah, and it's a political agenda going through education, which is why the Hungarians are very hated by the EU. It's one of the main reasons. They said they will not put the transgender, radical gender theory in their schools and teach it to their children. And their population took a referendum and said, no, we don't want this. And it's part of the reason conservatives are hated right now by the Biden administration. We're called domestic terrorists. I had no idea that I was.
I think I'd much rather you have you at a dinner party than Joe Biden, because at least he won't fall asleep. But maybe that's maybe that's unkind. And also, you might be able to engage in a conversation without an auto cue, and you won't say repeat cue, quote, or end of quote at the end of each comment that you make. But maybe I'm being unkind, as I say. He's a very nice old man.
We have a special counsel report saying that his memory is going. So I think you're okay.
Yeah, I mean, what a double-edged sword it was. There's no point in prosecuting him because a jury will simply say he's quite forgetful, really. Now, where did I put those nuclear weapons? I mean, come on. In your book, it may be not that much of a surprise that I'm referencing your book, because I did some research and found things fascinating. A big thank you to Kimberly as well. She's one of the great producers here as well. One of your quotes is, once again, President Biden's equivocation and blundering weakness has played into the hands of Iran. President Biden created the conditions permitting Iran's aerial assault on Israel. Now, I may be more sympathetic than some to Iran because I think they're a regional superpower. But taking a step back from that, it seems to me the recurring theme in what you've written is that we have a weak presidential administration, and that plays havoc with America's status in the world. And it means that America really isn't a global peacekeeper or anything else. I wonder how you'd put that in your words.
I actually think you put it better than I could, because he's done so many things to make us look very weak around the world, starting with Afghanistan, when we pulled out and left allies and Americans to die there, and billions of dollars of equipment to be used against us and our allies. And some of that equipment is showing up all around the world in the hands of people where we don't want it. But yes, you know, he lifted sanctions against Iran. He didn't enforce sanctions. He unfroze, I guess is the word, Iranian assets. So they were already thinking that they were all that before Hamas attacked Israel. And I don't think this would have happened under President Trump's watch. But, you know, now Biden and Blinken, they're very wishy-washy. They've basically supported this Hamas propaganda that Israel is targeting civilians within Gaza. That's not true. They take every care that they can. I actually traveled around and talked to military and intelligence experts in Israel a few years ago to the different borders. And I was very struck by how they live under this daily pressure of being attacked.
A bit of a warning here. This is ideology police alert here, Shay. Holly says, I've just had duck confit and broccoli for dinner and a good red wine. We're being watched by the bourgeoisie. We're being watched by the bourgeoisie here. I have to share with you this joke. I'll do it in a minute, actually, just before the break. Here's a really interesting point from Hemingway, I think with probably the same cynicism that we're expressing. In 2022, says Hemingway, in 2022, Joe Biden's message to Putin was, don't. Biden's recent message to Iran was rather more intense. Don't. Whoever steps out of line next is really in for it, aren't they, Joe? There is a certain feeling that it's like granddad saying, don't stand on the grass. Whatever. And that's more or less what he looks like.
Yeah, he hit the nail on the head, actually, that person that wrote in. That's what I'm talking about. It is embarrassing. Can I say that as an American? Yeah. This is embarrassing.
That's
what he says. Don't do it. And he also said a couple months ago about Iran getting, as he was getting onto Air Force One, we have the matter well under hand. And then Iran bombed near the consul in the U.S. consul, and I can't remember, but in Iraq. And I mean, you know, There's no repercussions. There's nothing. So he's done everything he can, I think, to make us look weak and also to put Israel in a very precarious position. I mean, not voting for the UN resolution against Israel, which caused it to pass. I don't know what we're doing. I think we're in a bad situation. I can't wait for a new administration.
Bourgeoisie Holly says, how very dare you, Lembit. The doc was very happy about it. I doubt it, Holly. Don't go anywhere. I'll share my joke after the break. You're listening to The Mark Morano Show Unleashed with me, Lembit Obik, just standing in for a couple of days. We're with the excellent and erudite Shay Bradley Farrell, and we will continue with her in just a moment. Keep your calls and comments coming. We've only got another 20 minutes, so do hurry, hurry, hurry. And I'll share my Marxist joke after the break. All of that with me, Lembit Obik, standing in for Mark Morano here on today's News Talk. I'll see you in a minute.
Military families often sacrifice precious time away from loved ones while serving our country. And for those with children, the separation can be especially difficult.
We were worried that with him leaving, that she would lose those connections with her dad.
Some of life's best moments happen between parents, children, and the pages of a good book. United Through Reading provides that connection.
You can watch your mom or dad read a book to you, and it almost feels like they're really there.
We ensure they remain a consistent, meaningful part of their children's lives, no matter the distance.
Just seeing Jacob recognize Daddy again after a long time just melted my heart.
And now, as we're facing greater isolation from our loved ones, United Through Reading is also available to veterans. Learn more about United Through Reading and download our free secure app at unitedthroughreading.org.
Prescription drug pricing points to corporate
freedom of the press is about your right to know. It's about your right to be informed. Today, there are real threats to press freedom and your right to know about the world around us. We must protect our right to know, no matter what kind of news is important to you. Before it's too late, understand the threats. ProtectPressFreedom.org.
From wars to censorship to cultural issues, you're with Mark Morano and Unleashed on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to Unleashed, Mark Morano's show with me, Lembit Obik, just standing in for a couple of days. Well, I have to tell you, I'm with the most excellent Dr. Bradley Farrell. We're talking about the international situation from an American perspective. Before I go back to Shay, let me just read a couple of messages here. I was mocking Holly in the United Kingdom for being bourgeoisie for eating duck confit. Her response is quack off, which I think I can probably read out. Well, it's too late. I've said it now. And then she says, bourgeois am I, and I can't read the rest of it. I think she's quite annoyed now. Sorry, Holly. I didn't mean it. You know I didn't mean it. And but River says, well, if Lembit says so, it must be true, Holly. Now there's trouble. And then Hemingway, who's on a roll tonight, Shay, in a numbing revelation, Joe Biden has spoken of his life. First thing in the morning after I've just woken up, it sometimes feels as though I've just woken up. The president went on to reveal that you had to remind himself on occasions not to say racist things and to always remember that toothpaste was not food. I don't think Hemingway likes Joe Biden very much. Dr. Bradley Farrell, is he a laughing stock in America?
Yes, he is, unfortunately. And you know what? I mean, we have to laugh sometimes or we'd cry all the time. But think about the fact that his wife is allowing him to do this. I can't imagine if my husband obviously had cognitive disorders. I won't say what I think it is. And I allowed him to go on the world stage, you know, and have his finger precariously over the nuclear button for one thing. But it's really quite tragic.
There is some good news here, though, because if he chose to declare nuclear war, he'd never get to the numbers without forgetting what he'd put in. So there would never be a launch. Tequila Deadman says, it is bourgeois to hate the bourgeois. I think this is all getting a bit silly now. Holly seems to have forgiven me. River says only the bourgeois would say that it's bourgeois to say it's bourgeois. It's just going crazy here. Let me just tell you my joke, which I was going to share. Why do Doctor, you're a doctor. You'll get this one. Dr. Bradley Farrell, why do Marxists never drink Earl Grey tea? Do you know?
I do not.
Because property is theft. Okay, you can have that one for free. Taxi. Anyway, back to the politics of it. We're looking at a situation where you quite clearly inferred that you would prefer a change of administration in the White House. Now, I'm sure that I can't say that we have a statistically significant sample by the fact that Doug, my first guest, and you, my second guest, both feel that way. What's your reason for thinking that Donald Trump would be a better president for America and potentially the world than the incumbent?
Yeah, I do think that. You're right. And this is my personal opinion, not as president of Counterpoint Institute. But one of the reasons is I had the pleasure of working alongside the administration. I was vice president at another public policy organization, and I know all the many things they did, not just domestically, but all over the world. Like, you know, I think, honestly, Donald Trump did more for women than any other administration. They had this initiative called the Women's Global Development Prosperity Initiative that raised women's businesses all over the world. We were the first country in the world with a comprehensive law and strategy on women, peace, and security. So anyway, coming back domestically, and I see you want to say something, but domestically as well, our economy was in great shape. And you know what? I wasn't being called a domestic terrorist. We had free speech here. You know, so right about now, I would be okay with a mean tweet.
I was just thinking when you said that Donald Trump has done more for women than any of his predecessors, that's not how he's portrayed. To be honest with you, I would say that according to what we see in the old mainstream media here, people aren't so interested in what Donald Trump's done for women as a whole, but they're more interested in what Donald Trump's done for Stormy Daniels. And that's as far as it goes. They right. just literally reduce the whole thing to did he, didn't he, in a rather distasteful, salacious, and in my view, uninteresting way.
And Lambert, too, not just for women, but, you know, he's the one that put together the Abraham Accords, which actually did help relations in the Middle East, right? And increased the economic trade there. So there was more stability, more economic trade going on. I mean, it was a mutually beneficial agreement. He actually put the Houthi rebels on the designated terrorist watch list. Biden took them off. He had already defunded UNRWA, where he already knew they were connected to Hamas terrorists. Anyway, I could go on, but he did so many things that he doesn't get credit for that Biden has undone and now is seeing the intelligence of going back to.
It does seem to me, and this is my opinion again, that Donald Trump's crime was to not conform with the Capitol Hill establishment. In the same way that outliers in the United Kingdom get pariahed, not for their political views, but for third-party ideas and objections. They say, oh, this man's a predator, or this man was offensive, or this man's a racist or anti-Semitic. Actually, what they're really trying to do is shut down those people who can't be controlled by the establishment.
Yes, they're trying to shut down people that they don't agree with and cannot be controlled. You're exactly right. But that is why Trump got elected, because he said things that all of us were thinking and nobody would say, no politician would take up. I mean, you know, whatever you think of this, he defunded, you know, so much of the UN that was actually against us, like UNRWA that's connected to Hamas. You know, he pulled us out of the Human Rights Council. We could argue on whether that was a good move or not, but the point is he was getting us away from things that weren't working, whereas the establishment, they're fine with the status quo. It doesn't matter if it's not working, if it's not benefiting people. That's why he was elected. And honestly, that's why I think he's going to be reelected.
You, returning to your book, you say very explicitly, Hungary's triumph over communism and the woke agenda. Now, you've mentioned the fact that they haven't got into this gender identity politics. Indeed, they have to some extent rejected it.
Yeah.
What do you mean strategically? Is it that's a specific example, but what are they doing strategically differently when it comes to the woke agenda, if anything?
You mean within their own country or?
Yes,
or
within their own country.
Well, I mean, the majority of the people aren't interested in it. Like I said, they did a referendum, and I think it was something like 90% of the people said, we don't want this talk to our children. The main thing is that parents want to decide what sort of sex education is taught to their children. That was the whole of the referendum they did, and the policy that, or amendment to one of their laws that was also passed. It was a child protection law that it was an amendment put on it. So I would say that is part of their strategy, but they're not getting, they have a bit a leftist presence there, Soros funded, but the majority of the people were in favor of this.
Interestingly enough, Dr. Bradley Farrell, in Ireland, in the Republic of Ireland, they had a referendum quite recently proposing to change the constitution of the country to essentially, and I'm paraphrasing to save time, take away the idea that a woman's place is in the home to run the home, and that's primarily a woman's job, to some kind of a non-gender specific statement. It was absolutely trashed by the public, overwhelmingly defeated. And quite obviously, the people in the parliament were nowhere near in touch with the general public mood. Perhaps these are the referendum you've described, the referendum I observed, indicates that the public is really drifting away from our woke political elite.
Yeah, I don't think they wanted it in the first place. And actually, one thing they did in their constitution, I guess about 4 years ago now, three or four, is they put in the constitution that a man is the father and a woman is the mother, i.e. we don't go for this multiple fluid gender identity nonsense. So they have it in their constitution in that way.
I have to say, I find this interesting because one of the other things that the wokists do is say, oh, you must be a homophobe if you don't agree with this. Well, I don't have to be a homophobe to not want my six-year-old to be challenged with identity politics that she is neither qualified nor interested in. And absolutely. I wonder what we got to the stage where, I don't know how we got here, actually, where in some pseudo-enlightened twist of political fate, we're trying to force children to think in ways which, from the overwhelming majority of the human race, simply isn't relevant. But you can't really talk about authoritatively until you reach puberty, probably, in many cases.
At least, right? I mean, I was still wondering what was going on in my life till I was like 35, at least. But I agree with that. I think part of it is because of what we talked about, the history of division. Marxism divides, and we're dividing people right now on gender and race. I think some of it also has to do with, you know, the diminishment of parental rights. Parents are afraid, especially in the United States, to step out and say, this is what we want for our children. Although I was very proud of our parents here. Somebody asked me one time, are the Republicans really fighting back on this gender identity nonsense? And I'm like, it's really the parents that are doing it. You know, our DOJ called parents pushing back domestic terrorists, but they rose up and said, no way, forget that. We are controlling our children.
I wonder then, if we return to the book, what are the lessons that I will learn when I give it a comprehensive reading? And if you were to send it to world leaders, what would they learn from your book about how to do it differently, for example, in the woke West?
I think a lot of it comes from understanding, because the things that I'm telling you now, the history of it, where it came from, I didn't fully understand. And the more I understand it, the more I recognize it. When propaganda is coming out at me, for example, this is one of the communist psychological warfare points where the left has taken over our language. You know, gender equality meant the differences between men and women. That's what I studied for my PhD, part of it anyway, in international development. It didn't have to do with radical gender theory. But they've taken over the language. And that's one thing, for example, I've started to recognize. And when you recognize what's being used against you, I think you better know how to fight it and say, no, you know, I believe what I believe. Stay back.
The word woke, I'm just saying this from memory, seemed to originate in the 20s or 30s and had a fairly noble intent. It was be aware of your cultural surroundings. I think it was something like that, but it's clearly been hijacked since then. So that we had this interminable debate in this country about whether a woman can have male sexual organs. And you had people like the likely next Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, Keir Starmer, saying 99.9% of women don't have penises. I'm just thinking, how did we get here? When we've got millions and millions of people Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but this upsets me. Actually, I just wrote an article, came out a few days ago in the Daily Caller here in Washington, D.C., about this, because the Biden administration mixes every women's policy and initiative with transgenderism. And I'm tired of it. You know, women have been fighting for their rights for a long time. And one thing I point out in the article is that it's actually the Democrats that pushed down the women's right to a vote in America for decades, while the Republicans were trying to push it forward. So to act like you're the party of women, when every policy, from our State Department policies to White House policies having to do with women, also push radical gender theory, I mean, that's baloney. You're not the party of women.
You've caused some disorder and soul searching, by the way, with what you've said, Bradley, Dr. Bradley Fowle. Just a bloke says, I'm 61 and I'm still wondering what's going on with my life. That's depressing because I haven't got 2 years to work it out then, just a bloke. And I can't help you. I've got my own problems. If you were then to be able to bring the people together the way that little Greta Thunberg was able to address the United Nations and say, how dare you? You're on that stage now, and you've got these world leaders in the room. What instructions will you give them to do on how to do it better?
Are you talking about in particularly focused on women or just in general?
In general, in terms of the thematic core of your book.
Oh, of my book, I see. Well, first of all, we are given our rights, I believe, by God. Our human rights are foundational. But all these other rights that governments are involved in, these positive rights, are they can sometimes trample on people. Transgender so-called rights, these are entitlement rights that are being pushed on people and trampling on our own rights. Anyway, if you move that aside, the point is people inherently have human dignity, and this top-down decision-making process is not supporting human dignity, our fundamental rights, or our free speech. And anyway, I guess I done there.
if you even get allowed to say so much, would they applaud insanely the way they did when Greta Thunberg said, how dare you, you're stealing our futures? Well, I hope so. I hope they would applaud you. And finally, I've got to ask you this question. Who is going to be the next president of the United States, Joe Biden or Donald Trump or other? Please specify.
I firmly believe that Donald Trump will be. I think that people are even more strong for him because of all the Moscow Soviet show trials, you know, in quotes, that he's been put through. He has been treated quite unfairly by our justice system, by the Biden administration. And I think people have had enough of it.
Thank you so much. And I'm wondering if you're an optimist or a pessimist about the future.
I'm always a glasses half full kind of girl. I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing if I wasn't. I mean, I believe this country is worth saving. I believe Europe is worth saving. I believe that we can remember our Christian roots, all of us, or our Judeo-Christian roots, and get some common sense back in our lives and remember that our families are important. And yeah, I'm marching forward, Lumbit.
And as a great incentive to you and me both, we can celebrate the fact that the International Monetary Fund predicts that the Russian economy is going to grow faster than any other major economy in the world. Well done, guys. Congratulations on the sanctions. Thank you so much, Dr. Shea Bradley Fowle. And if I do get to Washington, it'll be my pleasure to meet with you as well.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
That is my time up. That was Dr. Shay Bradley Farrell. Thanks very much for her time. And before that, we also had the insight, wisdom, and repartee of Doug Bando. And of course, the perspective of yourselves as well. You've been really lovely and lively tonight. Thanks very much for being involved. I'll be back again tomorrow, standing in for Mark Moreno on Unleashed. He'll be back after that as well. Of course, don't forget, I've got my shows at the weekend as well, on Saturday and Sunday, 4 hours apiece. Hope you've enjoyed what we've done today. Big thank you to Kimberly. Super work there. Also to the team in the studio. I'll be back tomorrow. Have a great rest of the morning, noon or night. I'm Len Bitobic. This is TNT. I'll see you tomorrow.